We continue the shiur in Gemara. The Gemara says that we always had, during the time of Beit HaMikdash, there was something known as nevuah, the power of prophecy. And nevuah itself means that a person, a human being, a tzaddik, spoke the words of Hashem that were given to him directly from heaven, placed into his mouth. He transmitted these words as a messenger of Hashem. The word Navi means speak. Niv Svatayim. He speaks, but they're not his words. He speaks as a messenger giving over the words of Hashem to people. Now the power of Nevuah stopped with the Churban Beit HaMikdash. We had no Nevi'im after that. The Gemara says, from the time that the Beit HaMikdash was destroyed, that time on, the Nevuah, the prophecy, the power of prophecy was taken from the Nevi'im, and it remained only in the hands of the Chachamim, the wise sages, the rabbis of the Jews. They still retain this power of prophecy. How? Because, note, if we take the date of the lives of the rabbis of the Gemara, they lived much later, most of them lived much later than the time of the Beit HaMikdash. Many of the Tanaim and all of the Amoraim, later rabbis of the Gemara, lived way after the Churban Beit HaMikdash. And yet these rabbis also spoke the word of Hashem. Because, again, basically, the Yisod Emunah, foundation of our Emunah, our faith, is the Torah min Hashemayim. The Torah was given from heaven. The Torah was given by Hashem. The word Torah means the written Torah and the Torah Shebal Peh. The Tanakh, Torah Nevi'im Ketuvim, and the Gemara. The Gemara too is the word of Hashem. As the Gemara itself tells us, the Gemara Shkalim, that even the Torah Shebal Peh, the oral Torah, the Gemara itself, also was actually written originally. Hashem gave the Luchot, the tablets, to Moshe Rabbeinu. What was carved out on those tablets? Every single word in the Torah, written and oral, every single din that exists in the Torah was carved out on those tablets between the space of each one of the commandments. How so many words could fit in so small a space is no question. It's very simple. The Luchot were heavenly, and in heaven is Lamala min ha-makom. It's above the concept or the dictates of space. For example, a Beit HaMikdash too, being so holy, was not ruled, was not governed by the laws of space. As the Mishnah says, all the Jews could assemble in the yard of the Beit HaMikdash. There was enough room for all the Jews collectively to bow with 6 feet of space for each one. How could millions of Jews fit into a yard that was so small, just a few hundred feet wide, and everyone to have 6 feet of space? The answer is that where there is Kedusha, it is not limited, it's not restricted by the rules of space. Where the Kedusha is still higher, and it's not governed by space whatsoever. For example, the Arun Eina Min Hamidah. Yemeni says that in the Kodesh Kodeshim, in the Holy of Holies, we had the two Kiruvim, two figures of the Kiruvim, the wingspan that covered the entire width of that room, exactly to the millimeter of an inch. And where did the Aron Kodesh stand? Between these two Kiruvim. How much space was there between these two Kiruvim? Zero. Not a thousandth of one inch. Yet the entire Aron stood there between these two, which means there was no law of space. It was completely heavenly. So too, the Luchot, which were holy, were not governed by space, so that all the words of the Gemara could fit into the Luchot, the tablets. point is, though, that the Gemara says this means, this teaches us, that Hashem gave to Moshe Rabbeinu every word of Torah that will be revealed in the future. All these statements that the rabbis of the Gemara will state, all the statements that the later rabbis will say, all the statements that are brought out even today in our time as Chidushei Torah, new ideas, new concepts, and Chidushim, interpretations of Torah, and all the future generations, till the end of time, every single thing that relates to Torah was given to, taught to Moshe Rabbeinu, so that he was Rabban Shel Kol Yisrael, you know, all the Torah that every Jew would ever know, since the words of the Gemara are the words of Hashem. Therefore, we can understand now what the Gemara says, the prophecy remained with the Chachamim, the rabbis of the Jews. The rabbis of the Gemara make statements. What statements do they make? The words of Hashem, just as the prophets of old did. This is what the Gemara says, the prophecy was taken from the Nevi'im, but it remained with the Chachamim. On this there is a machloket. Rabbi Yochanan says, I state that when the Beit HaMikdash was destroyed, the Nevuah was taken from the Nevi'im, the actual Nevuah. Nevuah translating as a prophecy, as a prediction of the future. But the Nevuah still existed. Hashem did not remove the power of the Nevuah from the world. So where is that Nevuah found today? Today it is found among two types of people. One, the Shotim, the fools, the morons, the insane. Second, among the Tinokot, children, small children. These gems, statements that small children come out with, unwittingly, unknowingly, their mouths are filled with these words of prophecy. So from a child you may hear a true prophecy that would have come from a actual Navi in the time of the Beit HaMikdash. And the Gemara says to cite an example, illustration of this. First, to show that the fools contain the power of prophecy, the Gemara says that Mar Baravashi was Rav Ashi's son. He was just about the last of the rabbis of the Gemara. One day he was walking in the marketplace of the city of Mechuzah, and he heard a fool mumbling. He overheard this fool saying that the head of the yeshiva, the chief rabbi in the city of Mechesia, will be one who signs his name Tavyumi. Mamad Avashi heard this, and he thought to himself, he made a very fast calculation. As far as he knew, nobody else signed his name Tavyumi but Mamad Avashi himself. In fact, Avashi too is their family name. So he said, this is a prophecy, it comes from a fool, prophecy is hidden. But I have overheard this, that means that I am going to become the chief rabbi. I must do something about securing that position as long as it's fated for me. While he was going to the city, the rabbis in the city were having a conclave, a meeting, to decide whom to appoint as chief rabbi. They decided perhaps they would select Rav Acha. Now, they wanted to get the consent of Mabar Avashi, whom they considered very high authority, to get his opinion. So they sent two rabbis to him to question him, to bring back his reply. When they came to him, he involved them in a discussion. He detained them. These two rabbis didn't come back, so they sent two more rabbis to him. He detained those two also. They sent, until he had a total of 10 rabbis with him, he told them to sit down, and he started to speak words of Torah, the laws of the holidays, which meant, when he did that, automatically it meant his entry into the position of chief rabbi, of Rosh Yeshiva. There's a rule that in order to receive smicha, degree of rabbi, it required 3 rabbis to get the degree from. In order to receive the degree of Rosh Yeshiva, it required 10. Now that he had an assemblage of 10 rabbis, by delivering a derasha, a lecture on the laws of Yom Tov, this proclaimed him as chief rabbi. When Rav Acha heard this, he conceded the victory to Rabbi Rav Ashi. The Gemara says this proves, though, that the prophecy, this was a true prophecy coming from the mouth of a fool. This illustrates the statement of Rabbi Yochanan. The second, the case of children. But first, it's important to note that there are different interpretations of this also. Just say that a fool, a person who's completely dumb, has the power of delivering a prediction that will come true, more so than a wise person, it's difficult to accept that face value. Other interpretations to this, others who say, Rabbi Yochanan meant something else. Rabbi Yochanan said that the nevuah is in the hands of the fools and the children. What he meant was the nevuah referring to what we said before. Nevuah means words of Torah. A person who comes out with chidushei Torah, new ideas, new interpretations of Torah, chidushim, that person is delivering words of nevuah, the words of Hashem. Where will you find that power of nevuah today? In the hands of the fools and the children, which means fools do not speak and children do not speak. That is, their words are meaningless. They're not accepted as speech. And this means that a person who conducts himself with silence, who leads his life one of silence, he doesn't speak any additional words. He has Shmirat HaLashon. He will never speak words that are bad, evil, lashon hara. He will never speak even dvarim betelim, words that are futile, wasted, that are not holy, not concentrated on pure kedusha. One like that is one that is fit, that from him shall come forth new ideas in Torah. This is what Rabbi Yochanan meant. However, the Gemara says now to illustrate another case, where we said that children too have the power of prophecy. And of course this statement about children we find confirmed in the Zohar HaKadosh. Zohar HaKadosh says that Shimon ben Yochai was once standing at the gates of Lud with some of his students. He overheard a child make a statement about the future of the Jews, future of the Jews in reference to the Roman government. Shimon ben Yochai said, this child has spoken the truth. Course, according to Kabbalah, Limudei Hashem are the two Sefirot, Netzach and Hod. And we know that the Nevuah comes from these two Sefirot, Netzach and Hod. When the children shall come, the lessons of Hashem, which are the Nevuah, the prophecy. The two Kiruvim, the Ben Shnei Kiruvim, the Rizal says also, the Kiruvim are Netzach and Hod. The foundations of Nevuah. The Gemara gives us this illustration of a case of a child being able to predict the future. Ones with whom we are very familiar. The Gemara tells us that Rav Chisda was once sitting and his small daughter was sitting on his lap. In front of him were sitting two of Rav Chisda's students, Rava and Rami Bar Chama. Rav Chisda liked these two students very much. They were leading rabbis in the Gemara. They were both very young at the time. Rav Chisda said to his daughter, sort of in jest, she was a very small child, and he said to her, tell me, which one of these two will you want in the future? Which one would you like to marry? And very quickly, now this exchange came very fast, you got to grasp this quickly. She answered immediately, one word, both. Immediately too, Rava said, I am last. He understood that this was a prediction. She said both, a child said it, it would come true. Which means she'd marry first one and then the other. Now in order to do that, something has to happen to her husband. So Rava said, rather than be the first one, something should happen to him. He said, rather, I'm last. Rami Bar Chama would marry her first. Then after she would be separated from Abimelechama, after her marriage would terminate, would end, then Levi would marry her, he would not be in danger anymore, because this prophecy had to be fulfilled. Let's analyze what the problem was when he said last. She said both, that was a prophecy, this was going to happen. She was going to marry both of them in succession. So here the case was, he knew that a marriage could terminate one of two ways. A woman becomes free from her husband, the Mishnah says, either through a get, a divorce, or through mitat habal, the first Mishnah condition. Either through divorce or through the death of her husband. This way she becomes free, be able to marry someone else. So Rava figured, if I say I'm last, that means that I am not wishing any harm on Lami Bachama. I'm not wishing he should die. I'm just saying that she will end the marriage through divorce. No harm will come to him. They'll be divorced. She'll be allowed, permitted to marry again, and she'll marry me. This was Rava's figure. This was his theory. That's why he said last. The question is, though, why didn't Nami Bachama say last? Why didn't he jump to state, to beat Rava to it, and say last, that Rava should be the first one, with the same calculations? Let Rava marry her, and let it end in divorce, then he would marry her afterwards. The answer is that we have a machloket in the Gemara as to which is worse. A man has to marry, has a choice of two women, which is the worst of the two? A widow, woman whose husband has died, or a divorcee, woman whose husband is still alive, but she is permitted to marry, she's no longer married to him. Which of the two should he marry? Which one is the worst of the two to stay away from? There are two opinions. One says that a widow is worse because of the fact that she did not lose her husband out of dislike. She still cared for him, and she'll still think about him. That, of course, is a minor reason. The Zohar Kadosh gives us a much deeper reason. The Sava Kadisha, Davieva Sava, the Zohar Kadosh tells us that the danger prevalent of marrying a widow is such that the second husband's life is literally in danger. Because when a man dies, part of him remains on earth, attached to his wife, part of his nefesh, his soul. And any person who marries this woman find the nefesh of her first husband a formidable enemy who will try to destroy him. The second husband is powerful. That means he's very holy, his neshama is very holy. He'll be able to overcome the spirit of the first husband. If he is not that powerful, even if he is equal to the first one, the spirit in its form, the form of a spirit, is much stronger than a human being living, and therefore it will drive away the second husband, drive away means to kill him. That's why we find in the Gemara the question about Nashim, Isha Katlanit, a woman who was a killer. Her husband dies, she marries a second one, the second one dies, and then she's not allowed to marry again. The third time he goes, we are sure that the third husband will die too. Why? Because this proves that the first husband's nefesh is a very strong one. So this is a reason, that's the reason the Zohar Kadosh. The Gemara gives a lighter reason, as we said, why a widow is worse than a divorcee. The other opinion is that a divorcee is worse. Better to marry a widow than a divorcee. Logically so, because a divorcee is a woman who still may be thinking of her first husband. He is still alive. She might still desire him. And this is very unhealthy for a marriage. Therefore, the Gemara says, stay away from a divorcee. Now, this debate was the were the opinions of Rava and Ami Bachama. ever felt that he would rather marry a divorcee than risk marrying a widow. So Nevers said, I'm blessed. Without wishing Rabbi Bacham any harm, I'm willing to marry a divorcee. Let Rabbi Bacham live, divorce his wife, the daughter of Chisda, and I will marry her as a divorcee. Rabbi Bacham did not want that. He did not want to say last for two reasons. To say last, he should marry a widow. He didn't want to wish death upon Nevers. To say last, he should marry her as a divorcee, this he definitely would not do. Because he felt, he maintained the opinion that a divorcee is much worse than a widow, and therefore he would not marry a divorcee under any conditions. The only alternative left to him was, he would have to marry her first, and then divorce her, and Nevers would eventually marry her. Now, interestingly, or let's say amazingly, there is a sequel to this story. It's not mentioned here. Those who learned the Gemara Yevamot is the actual sequel to this story. And what's strange about it is that in those days it was permissible for a man to marry more than one wife. In fact, the Nevers himself was the one who said a man should not marry more than four wives. Up to four wives is permissible, and not more. This is a statement by Nevers, meaning he himself maintained that position. He held that rule, that it is definitely permissible to marry more than one wife. Yet we find that Nevers himself would not, under any conditions, himself marry more than one wife. He held that this is permissible, but not advisable. Permissible, but much better, much more advisable than a man not have more than one wife. And this, of course, was hundreds of years, more than hundreds of years, of course, it's closer to 1,000 years, before the, 500 years, before the Chedam of Rabbeinu Gershom, first time that we found the Isur forbidding the marriage of more than one wife by a man was the Rabbeinu Gershom. Until then, there was no Isur against it. In fact, that Chedam was given only to the Ashkenazim. The Sephardim never got that Chedam. Despite this fact, this is a false illusion or a misconception on the part of most people who are under the impression that if they are Sephardim, there never was anything wrong with marrying more than one wife. It was always permissible, l'chatchila. You may do it outright. Those of Ashkenazim felt that this restriction, this ban, was placed upon them by the Bnei Gershom. Prior to that, more than one wife was the fad, the custom. Everyone did it. The truth is, the fact is, that it was not so. Rashi HaKadosh states beferush, clearly, the Gemara, that the rabbis avoided the days of the Gemara. They avoided strictly having more than one wife. That is, most of the rabbis in the Gemara. The majority avoided taking more than one wife because they felt that it was improper. Nevers himself, who stated that a person may have as many as four wives, himself did not take more than one wife. And therefore, the Gemara tells us a story there, a sequel to the story, that Rabbi Bar Chama and the daughter of Rav Chisda, when their marriage terminated, she did not marry again. She waited 10 years before she married Nevers. Those 10 years waiting period was due to the fact that Nevers was married at the time, and she waited patiently until his wife passed away. He would not take a second wife. She waited a full 10 years, and after Nevers' wife passed away, then she married Nevers. In fact, the Gemara brings it a whole discussion about, can a woman who's not married for 10 years, at a later age, have children? And Rav Chisda's daughter, Nevers' wife, did bear him children. Nevers jokingly said to her, the rabbis are whispering behind your back. How could you have children if you were not married for 10 years' time. After 10 years, the woman becomes infertile. She cannot bear children anymore. She said, those 10 years, if a woman gives up hope of remarrying, then she becomes barren. She becomes sterile. She cannot have children. But those 10 years, I did not give up hope for a minute. I kept on waiting, anticipating, expecting that I would eventually marry you, and therefore, since I did not give up any hope, it had no effect upon me physically. This is the sequel to the story where the daughter of Lev Chisda, as a child, predicted the fact that she would marry both Rava and Ami Bechama, and her prediction came true. This is proof to Rabbi Yochanan's statement that the power of Nevuah, prophecy, is found today in among children. Now the Gemara says that we have, let us take the comparison of the different Sefarim of the Torah. We have what is known as Tanakh. Tanakh means Torah. That's the five Sefarim of Moshe Rabbeinu. Reshit, Shemot, Vayikra, Bamidbar, Devarim. Then we have, that's the Taf of Tanakh. The Nun stands for Nevi'im. That's the eight books of the prophets. Then we have Ketuvim, later writings. That's the balance of 11 more Ketuvim. This totals 24. These are called the Chaf Dalet, the 24 Sifarim of the Torah, of the written Torah, Torah Shebichtav. These 24 Sifarim, divided into three parts, Tanakh, Torah, Nevi'im, and Ketuvim, are not on the same level of Kiddusha. The Torah, which means the Chumash, is considered holier than the Nevi'im and the Ketuvim. And when you have two types of Sefarim, one holier than the other, the Din says that it is forbidden to place a Sefer that is less holy upon a Sefer that is more holy. For example, the Chumash is the holiest of all the Sefarim. You are not allowed to place a Gemara on top of a Chumash that is desecrating the Kedusha of the Chumash. That's a Gemara, which is a later part of the Torah. You're not even allowed to place a Navi, a book of prophets, on top of a Chumash, because the Chumash is holier than the Navi. So now we come to a question, how about binding a Sefer when you have all three together? Before we get to this question and take it up in detail, let's first discuss that first rule. And this first rule, I would say, is a painful item. Painful because I have had some bitter experiences in the past where I had taught this to some of my students, and they studied in certain yeshivot, and they got into trouble on account of that due to, let's say, a lack of knowledge on the part of their superiors. Let's first state the facts that surround this. Let's take, for example, the Chumash, the Torah Shebichtav, and Torah Shebaal Peh, the Gemara. Of the two, the Chumash is considered holier because the Chumash is the basis, the Yesod, for all of Torah. The Gemara is based upon the Chumash. The Gemara says in Ta'anit, like a Devet, Lora Miza Boraita. There's nothing that's found in the Gemara that's not found as a Remez, hinted at, based on the Torah, the Chumash. Any of the other Sefarim, going from Chumash to Mishnah to Gemara to Kabbalah. The Arizal says these are four levels that correspond to the four different worlds: the Olam HaAsiya, Olam HaYetzira, Olam HaBriya, Olam HaAtzilut. Though Olam HaAtzilut is the highest, corresponds to Kabbalah, still all these worlds are still resting upon the bottom one, the main one, the Chumash. They're all based on the Torah. So since the Chumash is the holiest of all Sefarim, comparing Chumash to Gemara, The Din says in Shulchan Aruch, Yoredeya, that it is forbidden to place a Gemara on top of a Chumash. There are people who are very careless when they have a lot of Sfarim, they just put it down on the table. They ignore looking at what they are placing there, and invariably they place one on top of the other, which should not be done so. So the Din says clearly that a Gemara cannot be placed on a Chumash, and this is a statement that's agreed upon by all the rabbis in the Shulchan Aruch. There is one de'ah, one opinion from one rabbi who states his opinion. He says that when is this rule said? Only a case of Torah, Chumash, that's written the Gelila, which means a Sefer Torah, written by hand. It has the Kedusha of Sefer Torah, which is much higher than a Chumash. In the case of a Sefer Torah, then we have the rule, you cannot place a Gemara on top of a Sefer Torah. But those Seferim that are printed, our Chumashim, are not written in a Gelila scroll. Instead, it's just a printed Sefer, in a book form, and it's printed, it's not written by hand. It does not have the Kedusha of a Sefer Torah. Therefore, we are not particular about this law. It is permissible, he says, to place the Gemara on top of a Chumash if it's a printed one. Now, it is true there is a statement like that. One of the great poskim, one of the very great Gaonim of the past, recent past, that is, very recent. And there was a case, a controversy, once in a yeshiva in this neighborhood, where some of these students who were taught this rule in the yeshiva refused to place a Gemara on top of a Chumash. And one of the heads of the yeshiva attacked these students mercilessly as Amei Haaretz because of the fact, he maintained, that the rule does not apply to Chumash. I won't go into the details, the sordid details, or the bloody details of the battle then, but I will say what the outcome legally is. Final word legally is, as the Zohar Kadosh says, the Tikkuni Zohar, the Arizal, who go into this much more in detail. And we can understand that those rabbis of the Shulchan Aruch Yoredeya itself, who just write simply the rule, you cannot place Gemara on a Chumash, without differentiating between a Chumash and a Sefer Torah, they accept that rule flatly because of the fact that they follow the teachings of the Zohar Kadosh and Arizal, or the reason behind it, as the Zohar Kadosh tells us. The Torah Shebichtav, or let's put it first this way, everything that Hashem created in this world, bar none, the Zohar Kadosh says, comes in Zachar Unikeva. Everything is male and female. Whether it's humans, or animals, or even vegetation, vegetation too. There are male and female types of vegetation, flowers and so on. In all cases, male and female represent the Mikabel and Mashpia. Mashpia means the one that nourishes, the one that provides, Kabel the one that receives. The Zohar HaKadosh says, for example, we call the Ashirim and the Aniyim. Ashirim are Dukhra or Zachar. Aniyim Anukva, Nikeva. The Ashir, the rich man, gives. He is the Zachar, he's the provider. The poor man is called poor. He is in the form of Nikeva, the receiver. There's always the giver and the receiver that are called Zachar and Nikeva. This same thing applies too in the heavenly realm. According to Kabbalah, in heaven too, you have all the Sefirot, or all the heavens, too, in the form of Zachar and Nekeva, not Chas v'Shalom, in a physical sense, Chas v'Shalom. We find, even in Hashem's name, you have L'Shem, all mitzvot are done to unite, L'Shem Yichud, to unite, Kudsha B'Rikhu, Hashem, U'Shchintei, and the Shekhinah. There too you have Kudsha B'Rikhu, Shchintei, means Hashem and His Malchut, His ruling power, that the Hashem Hamlucha, that the ruling power is in the hands of Hashem. This Melucha or Malchut or Shekhinah is always the Malka, the Queen, the Nukva. The Kudsh HaBrich Hu is the Dukhra. And we won't go into details on that, it's too deep a topic. But just suffice it to say that always there is the top, the upper level is the Zachar, lower level is the Nekeva. Very, very different than today's woman's lib opinion. This is in all cases, spiritual, physical, animal, vegetation, everything is that in those two forms. Now, therefore, in the case two of the Torah, the Zohar Kadosh tells us that the Chumash, the Torah Shebichtav, is Duchra, is Zachar, Torah Shebalpeh is Nukva, Nekeva. I'm just saying this in one word, there are thousands of statements made about this in reference to the Vav K. Vav of Hashem's name is Torah Shebichtav, and the K is Torah Shebalpeh. Because the Torah is part of Hashem, the word of Hashem is Hashem. So that we see that the Torah Shebichtav, the written Torah, is the Zachar, Torah Shebalpeh is the Nekeva. You can never twist these two around where the Nekeva should be above the Zachar. The Kabel should be above the Mashpia. The Zachar is the leader. He provides, the Torah Shebichtav provides the material for the Gemara. For the Keva, the Torah Shebalpeh. And that is why the Zohar HaKadosh states emphatically, you're never allowed to turn these two over. Always the Torah Shebichtav must be on top of the Torah Shebalpeh. The Chumash must be placed on the Gemara as a symbol of that. Now, in this case, it's very clear and very, very obvious that this has nothing to do with whether it's written on a Sefer Torah, printed as a Chumash. Torah means the words of the Torah. Very clearly, it means that a Chumash in any form must be on top of a Gemara and not the contrary. So with that axiomatic statement, preface it, we now come to a question the Gemara itself asks. Of course, the Gemara tells us this rule, you cannot place a sefer of lower level on top of a higher one. The Gemara asks, how about if you have combined in one single sefer, you have Tanakh, Torah, Nevi'im, Ketuvim. You have, let's say, like the Bible, for instance. Well, the Tanakh in one single sefer, the Chumash, and then the Navi, and then the Ketuvim. Are you allowed to bind it in one single volume? What's the problem? Fine, when the sefer is closed, you have Chumash on top, Navi under it, Ketuvim afterwards. And when you're learning, you open the sefer, you turn the pages, eventually you're going to have Chumash on the bottom, Navi on top of it, which is wrong. Are you allowed to combine this? We have a Machloket. Rabbi Meir says that it is permissible. You're allowed to do that. Rabbi Yehuda says that it is forbid. You must have the Torah separately in a separate volume, the Nevi'im separate, Ketuvim separately. The Chachamim say that we do not even allow printing the Nevi'im together in one volume, writing it in one volume. You have to have every Navi, every book of Navi in a separate volume, every book of Ketuvim in a separate volume too. Now, basically, the reason for this machloket is not as we stated exactly. Tosafot says is our problem is not the fact when you open the sefer, it's going to be one on top of the other, because the rule of one on top of the other is, as the Rishonim explained, only when you have two different volumes. Then you cannot place one on the other. But if it's together in one single volume, then it is impossible to avoid that, and therefore it's permissible to one volume to place one on the other, as we do today. We have Tanakh in one volume. The problem here is, though, is it right, for example, to if a person wants to learn Navi, and he has one volume, he's got to turn past all the pages of Chumash, it's as though he was ignoring these and going to the Navi, which is a lower level of Kedusha, is that permissible? Rabbi Meir says it is permissible. Yehuda says it is not. and that's how the law remains, of course. But this refers again only, in this case, it refers to a scroll. When you have like a Sefer Torah, which is a scroll, you cannot get to the middle unless you turn, you keep on turning, Gilileh. That's disrespectful to all these dafim, all these pieces of parchment that you got to keep rolling until you get to the place you want. The way we have it today, is if I didn't print it, where you don't have to turn anything, you just open it right in the middle of one motion, that is permissible to have them combined, Torah, Nevi'im, and Ketuvim. But the law does remain that you cannot have them in one scroll. That's why you'll never find a Sefer Torah with back of it also written out the Haftorah, the Nevi'im. You have separate scrolls for the Nevi'im where they read the Haftorah. That's this Machloket. And of course the question is about the writing of the Sefer Torah. Now, each one, as we said, must be done separately. The Torah itself separately, the Nevi'im separately, and there are places that don't even read Navi from a scroll in a the Haftorah. Most of the Hasidic places just read it to themselves. There's no Baal Koreh who reads the Haftorah. Among the Hasidim, they don't read it. That Izal's case, he said each one says it himself. In any event, we go back now to the problem with the Sefer Torah itself. Yimei says, how is the Sefer Torah itself, which consists of the five Chumashim, from Bereshit until Einei Kol Yisrael, how is that to be written? You know, it's written by hand on separate pieces of parchment, then they are sewn together. Together, this comprises one entire scroll. Is there a special rule about the size of this Sefer Torah, the size of this scroll? Yimeda says there is a rule. The rule is that the height of the Sefer Torah, the height of the scroll, let's say if it's 24 inches, then the circumference of the scroll enclosed should be exactly the same as the height of the scroll. If the scroll is 24 inches high, the circumference should be also exactly, put a string around the Sefer Torah, should be equal to exactly the height of the Sefer Torah. And even this says that's not easy to write a Sefer Torah should come out exactly the same number of parchments, same sheets, number of sheets that would come out to exactly the thickness will be the same as the height. That's very difficult to arrive at. That's why the Gemara says that one rabbi, Rav Huna, wrote 70 Sefer Torah. 70, that's a large number. Out of those 70, he finally got one that matched exactly. He had to find the thinness, the exact texture. The parchment should be equal to, and when it's complete, it'll be equal to the height of the Sefer Torah itself. And it took him 70 Sefer Torahs to write before he got that one. He notices that Acha ben Yaakov wrote one Sefer Torah on the skin of a calf, the calf skin, that happened to him out exactly right, the first one he wrote. This was so strange an incident that the rabbis all looked at him. They couldn't help him. They looked at him in amazement, and that's like giving an Ayin Hara. And therefore, he passed away immediately from this look they gave him. That's how difficult it is. And to prove this point, how difficult it was for Rav Huna, the Gemara says that the rabbis told Rav Hamnuna that Rav Ami had written 400 Sefer Torahs. So he told him, no person can write that in a lifetime. No person can ever write 400 Sefer Torahs. What he must have written was the Pasuk Torah, Tziva Lanu Moshe Morasha Kilat Yaakov. That Pasuk is considered Torah in itself because it says when a child is born, the child begins to speak, the father should teach him that Pasuk. That's called teaching him Torah. He must have written this Pasuk 400 times, and that's what's meant by writing 400 Sefer Torahs. Now, the order or the trick of getting the Sefer Torah to be exactly the same circumference's height, this question was posed before the Rambam, and the Rambam writes in a Tshuvot Rambam to Rabbi Yonatan ben Hillel, the Dayan, the judge who asked this question. He writes along the Tshuvah, Tshuvot Rambam, that's Tshuvot Kuf Chaf Hei, where he describes the technical aspects of getting it to be exact. He describes the geometrically how it can be done. A person should measure off the sheets of parchment and to write a certain number of words on each line, and it'll come out to exactly. A person wants to find out the details, look into that.